Well, hello, and welcome to the reading of the Des Moines Register for January 31st, Saturday. I'm your reader, Kevin Cooney. Things changing very quickly, and Iris wants to make sure that we provide our listeners with as much information as we possibly can. In order to do that, we've changed our program schedule completely. So, this schedule will air statewide on all platforms until further notice. We will also continue to include information about resources in your community. During each paper, you will still hear the Des Moines Register each day at 9 a.m., 6 p.m., and 1 a.m. Please listen closely now to the following changes for all other newspapers. The Fort Dodge Messenger will be read at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. This hour includes readings from the Storm Lake Times and the Webster City Freeman Journal. The Mason City Globe Gazette will be read at 8 a.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Your Des Moines Register will continue to be read from 9 a.m. to noon. The Cedar Rapids Gazette is now read at noon, 7 days a week. The Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier will be read at 1 p.m. Sunday through Friday. The Dubuque Telegraph Herald will be read at 2 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil will be read at 3 p.m. Monday through Friday. Sioux City Journal will be read at 4 p.m. 7 days a week. The Ames Tribune will be read at 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Midweek Shopping Cart will be read each Wednesday at 9 p.m. Recordings of all newspapers will be available on our podcast page. You can go to iowaradioreading.org. Listen now at click on the Listen Now button, and then click Listen to Iris Podcasts. The papers are organized by region. Keep yourself safe, and thank you for listening. Now, to start things off, as always, we'll take a look at today's weather. And we'll start with the statewide forecast. Cloudy and breezy today. You may have heard there's some snow chances for parts of Iowa. The snow will be accumulating 1 to 3 inches in the north and west. There may be a morning shower mixed in, and then rain to the east and in the south, winds east-southeast at 12 to 25 miles per hour. Look at some of the forecast temperatures for the day. A high generally in the mid to upper 30s, and lows, well, right around 30 degrees later tonight. So we're talking a high, for example, in Sioux City of 36 and a low of 27. In Des Moines, a high of 37, a low of 29. And in Burlington, a low of 32 later tonight after a daytime high of 36. So let's take a look at today's front page of the Des Moines Register for this Saturday, January 31st. The lead story on the Register, new law requires 100% in-person school option. Schools must give parents option to send children to class 5 days a week. It's by Ian Richardson of the Des Moines Register and the USA Today Network. Governor Kim Reynolds signed a requirement on Friday morning for Iowa schools to give parents the option to send their children to school 5 days a week. It's time to put local control in the hands of parents where it belongs, so that they can choose what's best for their children, she said before signing the bill, surrounded by a small group that included state legislators, parents, and students. She signed it at a state capitol event just hours after both chambers of the Iowa legislature had approved it on Thursday. The requirement goes into effect February 15th, giving Iowa public and accredited private schools that currently offer a mixture of in-person and virtual instruction 2 weeks to make the transition. Many schools already offer an in-person option, but some do not due to continued community spread of the coronavirus. The bill passed the Senate by a 29-18 vote Thursday afternoon and passed the House Thursday evening by a 59-39 vote. All Republicans in both chambers voted for the measure. Republican Wes Breckenridge, Wes Breckenridge, a Democrat from Newton, was the lone Democrat to vote in favor of the bill. Now, in the Senate, a separate wide-ranging education bill introduced by Governor Reynolds also won approval on Thursday. This bill, which would provide publicly funded scholarship to qualifying students to help them attend a private school, passed 26-21 with three Republicans joining Democrats and voting against it. The measure will now head to the House. New law requires schools to offer in-person classes starting February 16th. So Reynolds, in her January 12th condition of the state address, had called for the legislature to send the legislation to her desk, quote, immediately, unquote. Republicans in both chambers moved the in-person learning bills through the committee process swiftly this week as their leaders sought to fulfill Reynolds' request. Parents are upset. Parents want their kids back in class. They recognize that their kids are falling behind, said Senator Brad Zaun, a Republican from Urbandale, on Thursday. The new law will not prevent schools from continuing to offer hybrid options or a fully virtual option for parents who request it. However, some school districts that are currently instructing partly in person and partly online expect to drop that hybrid option once the law goes into effect. The law will require school districts to give parents at least 5 days to decide which option to select for their children. In Des Moines, spokesperson Phil Rader said Thursday that the district, which currently offers hybrid and remote options, plans to offer a 5-day option for students, perhaps as soon as February 8th, while continuing the virtual option. Schools could still request waivers from the requirement from the Iowa Department of Education. If Reynolds allows that through a public health declaration, the measures would require the department to factor into the decision issues such as the number of teachers quarantining due to the virus and shortages of substitutes, food service workers, and school bus drivers. If schools do not comply, the hours and days of instruction would not count toward their instructional time. The requirement would extend until the end of June. Democrats, new law, a smackdown on larger districts. Reynolds and Republicans have emphasized that students in some districts have missed out on the advantage of in-person instruction, which include mental health benefits and access to several services. They have also pointed to evidence that grades have fallen during the pandemic. Representative Phil Thompson, a Republican from Jefferson, said many school districts already are holding in-person classes, but students at districts that are not offering them aren't receiving equal opportunities. There's no doubt in my mind every member of this chamber understands that our classrooms provide much, much more than quality academic curriculum, although that is the major factor in proposing the bill, he said. Democrats and others say that Iowa First needs to reduce community spread of the virus to ensure schools have enough resources to reopen school buildings safely. Iowa will begin vaccinating teachers and other school staff February 1st, but they will not be fully vaccinated by February 15th. Senator Joe Bolcom, a Democrat from Iowa City, called the bill a smackdown to larger school districts that have taken longer to return to in-person classes because of their unique challenges during the COVID-19 pandemic, such as ensuring social distancing in crowded classrooms. This bill is nothing more than Governor Reynolds settling a political score with large urban school districts that disagreed with her, Bolcom said on the Senate floor Thursday. During debate on Thursday, Republicans voted down several changes that Democrats proposed. Those proposals include applying the requirement only to schools following federal guidelines to contain the spread, such as mask wearing, social distancing, and ventilation. Another would have pushed back the effective date until teachers and school staff have a chance to receive the COVID-19 vaccine, and a third would have expanded the type of staffing shortages the state would need to take into account when exempting schools from the requirements. The problem is that Representative Thompson, the governor, and a lot of people seem to be working on this fast track to implementing this thing, said Representative Bruce Hunter of Des Moines. He went on to say, the only problem is they're not implementing it to be safe. On Friday, Reynolds applauded schools that had already returned to in-person learning and said the state plans to support schools with personal protective equipment and federal coronavirus funding. Quote, sadly, the biggest risk to our students is their continued absence from schools, unquote. She said, adding that national research and achievement results within Iowa have shown more students are falling behind. The Senate on Thursday also passed the governor's education choice bill that would allow students at certain schools to qualify for state-funded education savings accounts to help them attend a private school. The bill would widen the number of students eligible to open enroll in other schools and allow groups to form charter schools without applying through their local school district. At its heart, Senate File 159 is a bill that places parents back in the driver's seat for their child's very personal education journey, said Senator Amy Sinclair, a Republican of Allerton, on Thursday. The bill passed 26-21. Republican Senators Dawn Driscoll of Williamsburg, Tom Shipley of Nottoway, and Annette Sweeney of Buckeye joined Democrats in voting no on the bill. Reynolds said many Republican lawmakers and school choice advocacy groups have said that the legislation would give parents more options for where to send their children. Democrats and several groups representing educators and public schools have opposed the bill, saying public money should remain with public schools. Every year you've been chipping away at public education, and this is the grand doozy of it all, Senator Janet Peterson of Des Moines, a Democrat, said during the Thursday debate. Republicans also moved that bill through the committee process earlier in the week. Though the bill moved through the entire process in the Senate over the course of 1 week, House Speaker Pat Grassley, a Republican from New Hartford, told reporters Thursday that he expects House Republicans to move at a slower pace. He said the large size of the proposal and simultaneous work on other priorities, such as passing a school funding package, would likely slow down the process. We continue to look at the governor's proposal and definitely are very open to it, he said. But as far as how quickly as it moved in the Senate, at this point in time, that's where I'm at. I don't see it moving as fast. We have other things that we are doing in the same time as well. Also on the front page of the Register, pro-gun decision heads to a ballot. This is the story by Stephen Gruber Miller. Amendment expected to be voted on in 2022. The Iowa legislature has approved a proposed pro-gun amendment to the Iowa Constitution for the second time, paving the way for it to appear on Iowans' ballots in 2022. The Senate approved the resolution Thursday afternoon in a 29-18 vote along party lines after about 2 hours of debate. Hours later, the House voted 58-41, also along party lines, to pass the same measure. Both chambers are controlled by the Republican Party. Every Republican present voted in favor of the amendment, while every Democrat was opposed. Thursday's vote means that after years of work by Republican lawmakers and a mistake by the Iowa Secretary of State's office in 2018 that required them to start over, Iowans will have a chance to vote for or against the proposal themselves next year. The language of the proposed amendment says, "The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The sovereign state of Iowa affirms and recognizes this right to be a fundamental individual right. Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny," unquote. Republicans have argued for the measure for years, saying Iowa is one of only six states without protection in its constitution for the right to keep and bear arms. Quote, "The right to someone's own life and the pursuit of their own happiness, their own destiny, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, cannot be separated from the right to defend their life hence the fundamental right to keep and bear arms in our Second Amendment, said Representative Stephen Holt, a Republican from Denison. He is the House sponsor of the bill. Democrats say Republicans are misleading Iowans when they say that the amendment is equivalent to the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, and that the strict scrutiny language would allow the courts to overturn gun restrictions on the books. If voters approve the amendment in 2022, the state of Iowa would be the fourth state in the nation to have what are called strict scrutiny language for gun rights in their state constitution. Strict scrutiny is the highest legal hurdle for legislation to clear. It would require any legislation on gun rights to be narrowly tailored to achieve a compelling state interest. State Republican, strict scrutiny necessary to defend against, quote, liberal judges. Senate Democrats attempted to change the wording of the resolution from what they described as extreme language. They sought to exactly match the wording of the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. This would be a non-controversial bill in a bipartisan fashion to do something that has been overlooked for a century. But no, the majority party chooses division. They choose extremism, said Senator Tony Bisignano, a Des Moines Democrat. Republican lawmakers rejected Democrats' proposed changes. They said the extra state protection is necessary to defend gun rights from judges who are not supportive of the Second Amendment. Quote, "We have found the liberal judges are willing to just take away your right to keep and bear arms, the individual right. This is an attempt to do everything we can to make that harder to do," says Senator Julian Garrett, a Republican from Indianola. Democratic Senator Kevin Kinney of Oxford, a former lieutenant in the Johnson County Sheriff's Office, said he worried the strict scrutiny language could allow laws like required background checks to be struck down. "Not many of you have ever had to sit and look down the barrel of a gun," he said. He went on to say, "I have on a number of occasions, and when you are placing strict scrutiny into the Constitution, you're going to be diminishing our laws that are on the books. To me, this is going to make law enforcement more dangerous." House Democrats, background checks, permit requirements. House Democrats argued against the amendment in a wide-ranging debate that referenced mass shootings, suicide, court decisions around the country, and the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. They said they feared the constitutional amendment would negate Iowa laws such as permit to carry requirements and bans on gun ownership by felons. "Nobody in this room can guarantee what a judge is going to do," said Representative Wes Breckenridge, a Democrat from Newton, who's also a retired police officer. During the debate, Holt did not answer Democrats' questions about which laws he believes meet the strict scrutiny test. "If current or future laws are narrowly tailored to advance a compelling government interest regarding this fundamental future right, they will be safe. If they do not fit that category, they will not be safe and they should not be on the books." As in the Senate, House Democrats tried unsuccessfully to get Republicans to swap the amendment's language for the Second Amendment in the federal Constitution. When that failed, they tried to add language making it clear that Iowa's background check laws would still be protected. Representative Jennifer Confirst, a Democrat from Windsor Heights, told the story of an abusive former boyfriend who hit her, followed her, and said he wanted to kill her. "Thank God he didn't have a gun," she said. "I'm being dramatic when I say I don't know if he would have tried to kill me or not. Background checks keep men like this from having a gun," she said. Holt said federal background check laws would not be affected by the amendment, and as long as state background check laws meet the strict scrutiny standard, they will be upheld. Democrats also said they were frustrated that Republicans choose constitutional amendments on guns and abortion as the first measures to pass out of the chamber rather than focusing on the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, "We have done abortions and guns," said Representative Brian Meyer, a Democrat from Des Moines. "We are 3 weeks into the session, going into week four, and we have done abortion and guns. Zero on COVID relief. Zero. We should be ashamed of ourselves," unquote. Holt said he disagrees with the idea that the legislature had better things to do with its time. Quote, "We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We have a lot of different pieces of legislation moving, and this is one of the most important, Holt said. Amendment adds heat, millions of dollars, to Iowa's 2022 election. Amendments to the Iowa Constitution must be passed in two consecutive two-year sessions of the Iowa legislature before they are placed on Iowans' ballots for a statewide up or down vote. The Iowa legislature previously passed the same proposed amendment in 2019, so its passage Thursday means it will appear on the 2022 general election ballot. Iowans would have the chance to vote on the measure in 2020, if not for an error by the Iowa Secretary of State's office, which failed to publish notifications in newspapers around the state in 2018, announcing that the legislature had begun the process of amending the Constitution. The mistake caused lawmakers to begin the process all over again in 2019. The measure will add a wrinkle to the 2022 election when Republican Kim Reynolds will be seeking re-election. U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley's seat will also be on the ballot, although Grassley, 87, has not said whether he will run for another term. The resolution's Senate sponsor, Senator Brad Zaun, a Republican from Urbandale, previewed that campaign in his closing remarks on Thursday. "I can promise you that there will be a lot of money spent for passing this constitutional amendment in November, leading up to November 2022, and against," he said. "Millions of dollars, probably." And the remaining story from the front page of the Des Moines Register for this Saturday, January 31st. "Supplies of COVID-19 shots will be scarce for weeks," Iowa counties warn. This story is by Tony Lays, then the Des Moines Register, USA Today Network. Leaders in Polk and other Iowa counties warned on Friday that their supply of COVID-19 vaccine will remain far below demand for at least several more weeks. At the same time, the state is on track to expand vaccine eligibility to Iowans age 65 or older, as well as people in certain high-risk professions. "We are begging you to be patient as we continue to navigate this impossible situation," Polk County Supervisor Angela Connolly said at a news conference. "It is a tough, difficult time," she said. "People want to be vaccinated, and we want to get that vaccine in their arms," she says. Helen Eddy, the director of the Polk County Health Department, said her agency will have only enough vaccine to offer first doses to 2,575 county residents next week, plus second doses to 4,500 people who already received the initial shots. Polk County has about 61,000 residents who are 65 or older and have been declared eligible for the vaccine by Governor Kim Reynolds. The governor's decision was announced January 21st, and it was to take effect February 1st, but Polk County and some other counties began giving the shots to seniors this week. The governor also said that people in certain groups, such as school staffers, child care workers, and first responders, will be eligible for vaccination February 1. Eddy said that she didn't have an estimate on how many Polk County residents fall into those categories. Until this week, most COVID-19 vaccinations in Iowa had been reserved for frontline healthcare workers and for residents and staff at long-term care facilities. Iowa started vaccinating healthcare workers in mid-December. Eddy said that her department is taking appointments for vaccinations only 1 week at a time because it is unsure how many vaccine doses it will receive in the following weeks. The main way to schedule an appointment is to go to the county's website. In Polk County, it's immunizepolk.com. Immunizepolk.com. The department opened up next week's appointments for first round shots at noon on Friday. They were all snatched up within 10 minutes, the department announced on Facebook. Now, starting Monday, the Polk County Health Department will add a special phone bank to help seniors who have trouble using the internet to find appointments. The phone line will be available at 515-323-5221. Again, that's for Polk County residents who might not be able to use a computer. The phone number is 515-323-5221. Angela Connelly said Friday that the phone bank would have been launched sooner if the governor's office had warned counties that all seniors were going to be made eligible for the vaccine. "We weren't ready," she said. The Polk County Health Department is running its own shot clinic at its headquarters northwest of downtown and is also distributing vaccines via Hy-Vee and Medicap pharmacies and through Drake University. Eddie said there's no longer a shortage of health professionals willing to help vaccinate residents if more shots were available. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported on Friday morning that 169,341 Iowans, or 5.4% of the population, had received at least one of the two shots needed to obtain full protection against the coronavirus. Vaccinations began in mid-December. More than 600,000 Iowans will be eligible next week, and because they are either older than 64 or because they fall into one of the covered job categories. Federal officials have vowed to ramp up supplies of vaccine being sent to the states, but President Joe Biden has warned that it's going to take several months to get the shots to everyone who wants them. County expects 300 doses next week and needs at least 8,000. County health officials elsewhere in Iowa face challenges similar to Polk's challenges. In central Iowa, the Jasper County Health Department announced on Facebook Thursday that it was expecting just 300 doses of vaccine for next week. The department said it will need 8,000 to 9,000 doses to cover all seniors and members of the other groups that became eligible. "We do not have any further information about future allocations and when appointments will be available," the Facebook post said. "We have a wonderful team of medical professionals, clinics, pharmacies, and volunteers ready to serve as many residents as we can, as efficiently as we can. We just don't have the vaccine," the post said. In southern Iowa, Jefferson County Health Director Christine Estel expects to have 200 vaccine doses next week to cover more than 4,000 seniors plus residents in other eligible categories. "It's not even close," she said in an interview. Estel said the small department's phone lines have been jammed with people who want shots. She wants to make such appointments until she's waiting rather to make such appointments until she has doses of vaccine in her freezer because she doesn't trust state and federal projections on how much will be delivered. "I don't want to deal with 100 angry people if I have to say the vaccine isn't here," she said. Estel said that she and her staff are exhausted, but they try not to take offense when callers vent about the situation. "I totally understand. I'm a human too," Estel said, adding that she lost members of her extended family to COVID-19. Estel said she shares the public's frustration with the government's overall vaccine campaign. "We can do better," she says. One more story here about the COVID situation, and it's on the national level. Perhaps you heard about it. This new Johnson & Johnson vaccine. J&J's one-shot vaccine welcomed by experts. But will less be more? Tough choices could await. This is by Laura Neergard and Linda A. Johnson of the Associated Press. Johnson & Johnson's long-awaited vaccine appears to protect against COVID-19 with just one shot, not as strong as some two-shot rivals, but still potentially helpful in a world that is in dire need of more doses. Johnson & Johnson said Friday that in the U.S. and seven other countries, the single-shot vaccine was 66% effective overall at preventing moderate to severe illness and much more protective against the most serious symptoms, 85%. There was some geographic variation. The vaccine worked better in the United States, 72% effective against the moderate to severe COVID-19, compared to 57% in South Africa, where it was up against an easier to spread mutated virus. Gambling on one dose was certainly worthwhile, said Dr. Matai Maman, Global Research Chief for Johnson & Johnson's Janssen Pharmaceutical Unit. With vaccinations off to a rocky start globally, experts were counting on a one-dose vaccine that would stretch scarce supplies and avoid the logistics nightmare of getting people to return for boosters. But with some other competing vaccines showing to be 95% effective after two doses, at question is whether somewhat less protection is an acceptable trade-off to quickly administer more shots. Frankly, simple is beautiful, said Dr. Matt Hepburn of Operation Warp Speed, the U.S. government's vaccine initiative. The company said that within a week, it will file an application for emergency use in the U.S. and then abroad. It expects to supply 100 million doses to the United States by June and a billion doses globally by the end of the year. Johnson & Johnson would not say exactly how much could be ready to ship as soon as U.S. authorities give the green light. These are preliminary findings from a study of 44,000 volunteers that isn't completed. Researchers tracked illnesses starting 28 days after vaccination, about the time when, if participants were getting a two-dose variety instead, they would have needed another dose. After day 28, none of the people who got vaccinated needed any hospitalization or died, regardless of whether they were exposed to the regular COVID or these particularly nasty variants, Marin said. When the vaccinated people didn't become infected, they had a milder illness. Now, early data is mixed on exactly how well all of the different kinds work, but shots made by Pfizer and Moderna appear to be about 95% protective after the second dose. That makes for a dilemma. Would people given a chance want a vaccine found to be offer more protection? In related news, rival AstraZeneca's two-dose vaccine was authorized for use in adults throughout the European Union on Friday. Like the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, it can be stored in a refrigerator.
And we'll move on to more local news now from the Des Moines Register and the Metro section. Hiccup delays jobless payments. Problem occurred changing banks. This is by Tyler Jett of the Des Moines Register USA Today Network. Angie Gross needs new teeth. She told the Des Moines Register she isn't sure of the exact issue, but the bones in her gums have deteriorated so much that some of her teeth have gotten loose. She has a dentist's appointment on Tuesday. The problem is, Gross said, she's not sure she'll be able to make it. Her car doesn't have enough gas for the trip to her from her Atlantic home to the office in Council Bluffs. She said she has $4.60 left on the debit card where Iowa Workforce Development uploads her weekly unemployment payments. She said she didn't get paid this week, the result of an error at the agency as it transitions to a new debit card provider. The 49-year-old Gross said a customer service representative told her she should get her weekly payment, $172 after taxes, by next week. For now, she plans to wait at home for the funds. I had no idea this was going to happen, she said on Friday. Iowa Workforce Development announced Thursday night that some workers would not receive unemployment benefits this week because of a problem that occurred when the agency switched debit card providers from Bank of America to U.S. Bank. According to a news release, the agency provided incorrect data to a U.S. bank. to U.S. Bank. And as a result, some workers did not receive the new debit card this week. While some workers get weekly unemployment benefits deposited directly into their bank accounts, others, some without banks, get the payments on the debit card instead. Iowa Workforce Development has told the claimants that to avoid missing more weekly payments, they need to contact the agency and request a new debit card by Sunday. The agency also said they can log into their agency accounts online and change their payment method to debit card. Gross said that in her case, she waited on hold for about 2.5 hours on Thursday, trying to reach an Iowa Workforce Development customer service representative over the phone. Later, she showed the register an email from an agency representative telling her that she could continue receiving weekly payments on her old Bank of America debit card. The advice was inaccurate. She said that she then unsuccessfully tried to sign up for a new debit card online, but when she selected debit card under the list of options, the website finished and flashed an error message in red letters telling her that her current payment method is debit card. A screenshot she shared with the register showed. Well, it's hard to tell from looking at the website, but Gross said that she thinks the agency was not letting her switch payments from debit cards because she's already receiving a payment on a debit card, the Bank of America card, which will no longer receive funds. Gross, who lost her job at the Salvation Army when the pandemic began, said she also called customer service at U.S. Bank, was told the company didn't have the ability to send her a new card without information from Iowa Workforce Development. I have no idea what I'm going to get paid, she said. I have no idea what card I'm going to get paid on, and I don't know who I'm supposed to believe. I don't know where to go with this, she said. Iowa Workforce Development Director Beth Townsend did not respond to questions about Gross's case, including what error message meant when Gross tried to request payments on her debit card. When the register asked how many workers missed payments this week, what incorrect data the agency provided to U.S. Bank, and whether any debit cards went to people not on unemployment, an agency spokesperson sent a copy of its news release about the problem. The news release does not address those questions. The agency has run into other technical problems this month. Iowa Workforce Development sent out an inaccurate tax form to unemployment recipients last week, and some workers on federal unemployment programs have not received payments since the start of the year because the agency is still programming some changes into its computer systems. Meanwhile, Gross said she is worried about bills that she needs to pay next week. Her water bill, normally about $120 a month. Her rent is relatively cheap. Her ex-husband lets her stay in one of his properties for $400 a month if she takes care of the place. But rent is due on the first of the month, and she said she lacks the extra charges. She tacks on extra charges for every day that she's late. I have no money, she said. I make promises to people that I'm going to pay with what I have. Word has been, my word's been bad, rather, for 2 days. Anna Maria Vasquez, a 26-year-old from Columbus Junction, said her husband did not receive a new debit card this week either. When she emailed Iowa Workforce Development, a customer service representative told her that the cards were sent in a blank white envelope. Despite the agency's admission that some workers have not gotten cards due to an error, Vasquez says the customer service representative suggested that she or her husband had thrown out the cards by mistake. She said she initially believed this was possible, but U.S. Bank has a tracking system for new cards, and she saw that the bank had finally mailed out a card for her husband on Thursday. This way, the staff have been answering us, the way, the staff has been answering us, really has been uncalled for, she wrote in a Facebook message to the register. They need to realize that some of us need the money, and it's their job to answer us about the money. Michelle Elson, 44, of Van Wert, said she signed up for direct deposit with Iowa Workforce Development after she and her husband's debit cards didn't come. The couple previously earned a living taking care of other people's homes, cleaning and mowing yards, shoveling snow. Customers dried up at the start of the pandemic, plus Elson's mother lives with them and is immunocompromised. Elson and her husband decided that they needed to avoid as much contact as with others as possible. They are both on pandemic unemployment assistance, receiving $200 a week each through the federal program. It's barely enough money to pay their $1,400 in monthly expenses. But then, Elson said, Bank of America closed her husband's debit card on January 14th because of a technical error. The agency did not replace the card, and he has not received payments since. Now they are missing her payment as well.
Now, Elson says she hopes to receive her benefits in a direct deposit next week. On Friday morning, she bought a gallon of milk and three cans of cream and mushroom soup using $1 bills that she found around the house. When she got home, she counted the coins left on the end of her table. To her knowledge, it's the only money that they have left. She said the total added up to $1.15. You know, she said, if we have any kind of emergency go down right now, we would be screwed.
Continuing on now with more local news from the Des Moines Register for Saturday, January 31st. Charges dropped in secret filming of Iowa pig killings. This is by Donnell Eller, the Des Moines Register USA Today Network. A Northeast Iowa county attorney has dropped trespass charges against an animal rights activist who secretly filmed a company destroying thousands of pigs that it was unable to send to packing houses during last spring's coronavirus shutdowns. Grundy County Attorney Erica Allen filed a motion Thursday to dismiss a felony trespass charge against Direct Action Everywhere's Matt Johnson, who secretly filmed Iowa Select destroying thousands of pigs there in May. Johnson still faces felony charges in a separate Wright County case, where he and other activists documented what they said was animal abuse and the, quote, rescued a sick piglet, unquote, that would have been killed. Allen indicated West Des Moines-based Iowa Select had contacted her and asked her that the Grundy County case be dismissed after Johnson subpoenaed employees to testify. The six employees Johnson's attorney subpoenaed included owner Jeff Hansen. Johnson said Friday that he wanted the employees questioned in his trial to show their actions violated Iowa livestock neglect laws. He also said it would be in the public interest to hear company executives and publicly defending the suffering they willfully and lucratively inflict on animals, their own employees, and the general public. Iowa Select's own actions, stifling dissent every way they can while refusing any sort of open, transparent dialogue, illustrates that they are very aware of how shameful their actions truly are, he said. Iowa Select, the nation's fourth largest pork producer, has denied any wrongdoing and said it worked with veterinarians to determine how best to destroy the animals it was unable to slaughter. It said Friday that it had asked that the charges be dropped because it cannot be distracted by individuals who choose to break the law and then grandstand. The non-jury trial was slated for Monday. Each trespass charge carries a maximum penalty upon conviction of 30 days in jail. Producers across the Midwest struggled last year to slaughter market-ready pigs, cattle, chickens, and other livestock after meatpacking plants temporarily shuttered when workers became ill with COVID-19. Johnson, contacted by the Iowa Select whistleblower concerned about animal welfare, secretly filmed the company killing the pigs in a rural confinement facility by shutting down the building's ventilation and piping in steam heat, raising the temperature in the building. Direct Action Everywhere described the pigs as shrieking in agony. Iowa Select said it exhausted every possible option, from finding more barn space to donating pork to food banks and employees before deciding to destroy the animals. The American Association of Swine Veterinarians said shutting down a confinement's ventilation to cause hypothermia is an acceptable form of euthanasia in, quote, constrained circumstances. The group's board identified the COVID-19 meat packing disruption as one of those situations. The video, which the group said was taken with a hidden camera, opens with a shot of pigs milling in a large enclosed space. In another scene, shot through a fog that the group said was steam, the barely visible pigs can be heard squealing. In a third scene, two men carrying what the group said were bolt guns walk among the apparently dead pigs, nudging them with their feet. In a final scene, a front end loader scoops up the carcasses. Direct Action Everywhere says it has been active in Iowa, seeking to expose inhumane treatment of animals in confined animal operations to challenge the state's so-called ag-gag law. The statute makes it a crime for animal welfare activists, journalists, and others to go undercover at meatpacking plants and livestock facilities to document conditions. Other local news now. Marshalltown woman struck and killed by train. This is by Andrea May Sahuri, Des Moines Register, USA Today Network. A Marshalltown woman was struck and killed by a train early Thursday morning, according to the Marshall County Sheriff's Office. Union Pacific Railroad notified law enforcement that a train traveling westbound had struck someone along the train tracks about 6:15 a.m. in the 2300 mile of Marshalltown Boulevard, which is about a half mile southeast of the Marshall County landfill. This is according to a news release from the Marshall County Sheriff's Office. Deputies responded to the scene and discovered Teresa Hannum, 55, of Marshalltown, unresponsive and pronounced her dead. So far, evidence indicates that Hannum was struck by accident, according to the chief deputy, Joel Phillips, of the Marshall County Sheriff's Office. The incident occurred in a low-light wooded area with a nature conservation area and a bike path less than a mile away, he said. It's not uncommon for people taking a shortcut or walking in this area, Phillips said. The incident does remain under investigation. The Marshalltown Public Library, in a Facebook post Thursday night, said, "Our hearts are broken today as we grieve the loss of one of our own, our beloved Teresa Hannum." Hannum is listed as the library on the library's website as a youth services librarian. Meanwhile, over in Ames, the Ames City Council okays eminent domain use for flood mitigation. The Ames City Council voted 5-1 to allow eminent domain use for flood mitigation project. This is according to Danielle Garr of the Ames Tribune. Ames City Council will allow eminent domain for the flood mitigation project, though the city will first pursue purchasing the land. Since the Federal Emergency Management Agency granted $3.7 million to fund the project, the council is required to hold a public forum on potential eminent domain use. The project, which will mitigate flooding along Squaw Creek near the South Duff Bridge, will require total acquisition of two properties and will impact seven other properties. One business owner, Jim Howe of Howe Welding, and his wife, Piper Wall, expressed their concerns with the project at Tuesday's city council meeting. "I'm sure I'm kind of a fly on the ointment here, but I guess a couple of things that concern me is we keep building up and building up, but now we want to solve the problem," Howe said. "I'm sure we're going to lose this deal, but we have got to quit building on floodplains if we are trying to mitigate flood problems." Howe said he's concerned that the project will cause more flooding issues for their neighbors downstream. But municipal water engineer Tracy Peterson said the city will pursue future projects to resolve this issue. Councilmember Tim Garten asked if the functionality of Howe Welding would be impacted by losing this portion of the property that is needed to complete the flood mitigation. Peterson said everything within the impacted area is movable. Wall referenced a 2016 email that they received from the city, which said that there would be opportunities to add specific concerns with the plan, to address specific concerns with the plans. We are now January 21, and no specific plans, Wall said. Peterson said at the meeting that their team is very close to finishing the plans, but is fine-tuning the hydraulic model. A property owner in the area, Gary Schweiger of Cedar Rapids, said that Peterson and other city staff members have been, quote, quite responsive, unquote, to his questions. Schweiger owns RL Enterprises and leases the property where Red Lobster is located. Schweiger will lose roughly 16 parking spaces, he said, where a retaining wall is planned. I understand the reason for the mitigation project, Schweiger said. I am concerned how I will be remunerated for the loss of my property, or at least part of my property, and the long-term effect on what is really a nicely situated commercial property. The city will work with appraisers before deciding on an offer for property owners, Peterson said. Our intent is to pursue voluntary settlement and to negotiate with people, Peterson said. Wall said she is against the use of eminent domain in the circumstances because it does not benefit the community but a set of businesses. Ames City Attorney Mark Lambert said that the use of eminent domain for a project would serve a public purposes, making the use legal. Councilmember Gloria Betcher, who consistently voted against the project, aside from accepting FEMA funding, was one dissenting vote. For city documents, council agendas, and information on future meetings, visit cityofames.com for more information. And you can find recordings of past meetings or watch future meetings live at youtube.com/AmesChannel12. We'll get back to some world and international news now from the pages of the Des Moines Register and USA Today for Saturday, January 31st. Travel security boosted for lawmakers. This is from the Associated Press's Alan Fram and his Dateline Washington, D.C. Capitol Police are increasing security at Washington area transportation hubs and taking other steps to safeguard traveling lawmakers as Congress continues to react to this month's deadly assault on the Capitol. Capitol Police will be stationed at area airports and Washington's Union Station Railway Hub on busy travel days, the House's chief law enforcement officer wrote in an email obtained Friday by the Associated Press. Timothy Blodgett, the acting sergeant-at-arms, wrote that officials are setting up an online portal so lawmakers can notify them of travel plans and urge legislators to report threats and serious suspicious activity. Members and staff should remain vigilant of their surroundings and immediately report anything unusual or suspicious, the email said. Blodgett said lawmakers were previously advised that they can use office expense accounts to pay for security to protect their offices and events in their districts and for self-protection while performing official duties. It also cited a 2017 Federal Elections Commission opinion that they can use campaign contributions to install security systems. President Joe Biden is in close touch with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the California Democrat, about congressional security, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said. Pelosi and lawmakers face threats of violence from an enemy within Congress and said that money is needed to improve security. Pelosi's comments were a startling acknowledgement of escalating internal tensions between the two parties over safety since the January 6th Capitol attack by supporters of former President Donald Trump. Also Thursday, the acting chief of the Capitol Police said vast improvements are needed to protect the Capitol and adjacent office buildings, including permanent fencing, such as barricades. Such barricades have ringed the complex since the Capitol riot, but many lawmakers have resisted giving the nation's symbol of democracy the look of a besieged compound, and leaders were noncommittal about the idea. Pelosi focused her comments on the anxiety and partisan frictions that have persisted in Congress since the riot, which led to 5 deaths. She said she thinks the Congress will need to provide money for more security for members when the enemy is within the House of Representatives, a threat that members are concerned about. Asked to clarify that, Pelosi said, "It means that we have members of Congress who want to bring guns on the floor and have threatened violence on other members of Congress." Some lawmakers who voted for this month's House impeachment of Trump have reported receiving threats, and initial moves to enhance safety procedures have taken on partisan undertones. Some Republicans object to having to pass through newly installed metal detectors before entering the House chamber. Pelosi has proposed fining lawmakers who bypass the devices. Pelosi has not said whom she meant by her reference to an enemy within the House, and a spokesperson provided no examples. Putin extends last Russia-U.S. nuclear treaty. Vladimir Isachenkov from the Associated Press has this story. Russia President Vladimir Putin on Friday signed a bill extending the last remaining nuclear arms control treaty between Russia and the United States before the pact expired February 5. Both houses of the Russian parliament voted unanimously Wednesday to extend the new START treaty for 5 years. Putin and U.S. President Joe Biden had discussed the nuclear accord a day earlier, and the Kremlin said they agreed to complete the necessary extension procedures in the next few days. The pact's extension does not require congressional approval in the United States, but Russian lawmakers had to ratify the move. Russian diplomats said the extension will be validated by exchanging diplomatic notes after the procedures are completed. Now, the treaty was signed in 2010 by President Barack Obama and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, limits each country to no more than 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads and 700 deployed missiles and bombers, and envisages sweeping on-site inspections to verify compliance. And we'll take a quick look at a couple of other stories on the Nation and World Watch from the Associated Press and USA Today and the Des Moines Register. Dateline Boise, Idaho, constitutional plan on legal marijuana advances in Idaho. A proposed constitutional amendment that would prevent the legalization of marijuana in Idaho moved forward Friday as lawmakers there in the conservative state tried to halt the increasing acceptance of the drug. A Senate committee voted to send the joint resolution that bans all psychoactive drugs not already legal in Idaho to the full state Senate. That list would change for drugs approved by the Food and Drug Administration, but the primary target is marijuana, with Idaho surrounded by states that have legalized pot. And finally, Canada to quarantine travelers and suspend flights south. Toronto, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on Friday announced stricter restrictions.